gone fishing. There's a sign upon your door.
Bob, don't blab it around, will you?
Gone fishing.
Keep it shady. I got me a big one staked out.
You ain't working anymore.
This one's pretty appropriate for us old guys.
It is. Cows need milking in the barn.
I have the twins on that detail. Each take a side.
But you just don't give a darn.
Give them 4 bits of cow and hand lotion.
You just never seem to learn.
Man, you taught me.
You ain't got no ambition.
You're convincing.
Gone fishing.
Yeah, okay. I just trying to get you in the mood because Fishing Frank here at Radio Fishing, and we got Captain Greg, and we've got the one and only Vinny with us today. And we've been having discussions about what becomes if you become a master. Now, I'm not sure what
That's
definition
grandmaster.
Of
grandmaster.
Grandmaster. What was this? You guys were talking about grandmasters when I butted in. What was going on here?
In the PGI Fishing Club, we've got this little program where, as people catch different fish, they climb a ladder. And when you get to a certain point and catch a certain number of species and size, you are awarded a shirt with the PGI logo on it, and it also says Master Angler on the
okay.
shirt.
Okay. So
everybody's trying to get that.
Ah.
So, I don't know. When I was climbing a ladder, I used to get paid money for it, you know. But, I mean, it wasn't nearly as much fun, you know, but I did get paid.
Okay. Vinny, can you come around to the side here so you're kind of more in front of that? I got to
okay.
put it. Yeah, there we go. I'm trying to get you so I can actually hear you better over here. Okay. Oh, that was loud. I guess I got to get away from this thing a little bit. All right. Anyway, Radio Fishing, PGI Fishing Club. The next president of the PGI Fishing Club is Vinny. And when do you take office?
It'd be next year.
Next year.
So it goes through the end of December. And
so you're just nothing now.
January. I'm nothing.
You're still a PR.
You know, there's still the formal election in November.
Is anybody running against you?
Oh, so, but the fix is in, right?
I don't think so.
The fix is in. Yeah, hey. He's the new guy. They suckered him into it.
You know, there's only running when you have somebody you're running against. You
know? Okay, so I'm trotting.
Okay, you're trotting to the. All right.
I'd say you're strolling. There's not even any effort involved there.
Okay, so the PGI Fishing Club is huge. Now, you do have to live in Punta Gorda Isles to be a member of the PGI Fishing Club.
That's right.
But you guys have like 600 members or something.
Yeah, right.
Like that?
Close to 600 right now.
It's a huge club. Very well run.
Since you're going to become president, you could probably get guys like Frank and myself honorary memberships, right?
We'll work on that, Greg.
Oh, okay.
Actually, I think I have one.
I think it was, does, actually.
It was actually 25 years ago or something like
wow.
that, I think I got one. I don't think anybody would know it. I mean,
that's why you don't remember it was that long ago.
And all that other kind of stuff. But I actually had one from about the 5-6 of the fishing clubs. Yeah. I was one of the first speakers to ever speak at the PGI Fishing Club when it came around. Well, but that was back in the days when, you know, I was single, and you going out to the tavern at night, and you'd have
that
a few drinks.
That was a really long time ago.
And it literally would end in fisticuffs because I was telling people who didn't live here where to go catch fish. And no
and
one...
You were giving away all the
I
secret
was giving
spots.
Away local spots and secrets. And that caused, and much to my delight, because back then that used to be part of my recreational activities. We used to have, regular fisticuffs at several of the local taverns. Yeah, there was. But before me, no one ever did that. And so, yeah, I was a trendsetter. Not a
so,
popular
so
one either.
So for the first 10 years you were here, they were trying to run you out of town on a rail, right?
Actually, the first few years I was here, I was still a musician. And I played at a huge amount of these, you used to go to a big party and there'd be hundreds of people. And it'd be swamp cabbage, mullet gizzards, and hog.
The good stuff.
That was the normal fare for everything because everybody made up big batches of swamp cabbage because it was cheap, you know. And then mullet gizzards. People don't realize what a delicacy mullet gizzards used to be. You know how you go to a grocery store and you buy chicken gizzards? Well, mullet have the exact, almost identical, except a little better tasting. I don't like chicken gizzards, but I can eat mullet gizzards.
Vinny was eating chicken gizzards last week.
I love them.
Yeah, mullet gizzards actually better. and it's the same organ. I mean, chickens need to peck rocks and pebbles to grind up their food, and that's why people mistake mullet for a vegetarian, and they're not. They'll eat shrimp, they'll eat fish, they'll eat vegetable. They are omnivore. They will eat literally anything in front of them, but if it's got a shell on it or a scale, anything hard, they're afraid it'll choke up their gizzard. And so they only get the real fine sand off the bottom of the canals. Watch them when they dive. They go down, and you'll see all the mud and silt coming out of their gills, and they're actually putting sand in their gizzard so they can chew up food. If they could get bigger pebbles, like if they're along the beaches and stuff like that, where they have bigger sand chunks, they can actually eat more variety of food. But anything hard, they spit out. And that's why mullet do what they do. But the gizzard and mullet is actually very good eating.
So did we ever figure out why those mullet always come up and rub that pipe at the end of the ramp at your house?
I don't know what's going on with that. I mean, because it's a fiberglass rod.
Yeah.
And I use it to mark the end of my boat ramp. I have a boat ramp in my side yard. And what's funny is you don't need a permit to put one in. People don't know that. But you could actually now, the county changed the law. And if there's a slab, you got to have a permit for a sidewalk or a concrete slab. But at that time, you didn't need a permit for a concrete slab. And there was nothing they could do about it. We just dug it out, put the boat ramp in, and no permit required, nothing. Oh, they were mad.
But
the county was stopping by regularly trying to stop me from building because I looked. There was no permit. And then they'd go back and find out there's no permit. They'd have to take their little red thing off, and we'd finish it up. But now there is. You do have to have a permit for a slab, so you do have to have the permit for the boat ramp.
But yeah, a few years back, you know, I was going down there fishing off the seawall all the time, and I'd walk down, and I'd see that rod bouncing around back and forth in the water. I'm like, what in the hell is going on there? And I'd go down there, and I could see these mullet, and they'd, there's half a dozen of them, dozen of them, whatever. And they were taking turns coming by, and they'd rub on that stick and
I guess
go
getting
on
their
by
back scratched.
And, you know, I'm like, Frank, what's up with this? He's, I don't know.
Yeah, I think they're just using it as a scratching post.
Okay, so all you scientists out there need to figure this out and let us know. Inquiring minds want to know.
I think it's just a scratching post. I think they just get itchy, and if you don't have arms and fingers, what else do you do? Rub on something.
Yeah, I guess.
Didn't think of fish getting an itchy back, but whether it's a stingray, once they get used to people, one thing they do like is being rubbed and scratched. I mean, it's, you see it with fish all the time.
Yeah. Swimming with the rays.
Yeah. So I think it's just that simple. Just back scratcher. Yeah. I don't know what else. I mean, why else would they do it?
You should charge them.
Yeah, I know. I should put a little.
Send your firstborn young through, we're going to make dip tonight.
Oh, man. A little too biblical for me. I'm sorry. Okay. I think I could pass on that one. Anyway, Vinny, so what's upcoming? You guys were out fishing last week.
Yeah.
What happened?
Well, we actually, a lot of the members in the club have been doing really well with tarpon over the last couple months, and pretty much got it figured out, but Darlene and I went out last week, and
that's this past week here, right?
Yeah, past week, and we got into a handful of tarpon. We hooked up actually three, boated two, and Darlene lost one that I'm going to say was over 150 pounds. It was a big tarpon, and then we boated two that were right around 100.
Not bad.
And all we're doing, we're getting out there. We were just south of marker one between Ponce and marker one. Put the bait out, and we're putting a live ladyfish on with a balloon. And not 5 minutes after had them in the water, we're hooking up.
How do you catch ladyfish?
We normally will troll from Mangrove Point towards Alligator Creek in about 4 feet of water. And we're trolling the, you know, white storm twitch stick and some little white jigs.
So,
like crappie jigs.
What you're talking about right now is catching ladyfish, right?
Yeah.
Okay, because one of the things we always forget about doing is we say, okay, use this. But in the case of these, it's better to go out and catch them. So you're trolling just outside the sandbar south of Ponce.
Yep.
With a storm twitch stick and small paddle tail,
like
curl tails.
White crappie jig.
Oh, the little bucktail styles, yeah. Or the curl tail?
Little bucktail.
I really like those little crappie jigs for those fish. Crazy, but most people don't use them because they look at it and they think freshwater.
Yeah.
But back your drag off, get down so you only got like a pound of drag on there, and the jig will hold up fine. But if your drag's too heavy, that's when the hook will bend.
Well, you know, one of the problems using the twitch stick with the treble hooks is you end up hurting the you hurt the ladyfish. Okay. And you want a live ladyfish if you want to get the tarpon.
So what I do is I pinch the barbs on my treble hook. I flatten out the barbs on them when I'm using them for catching bait like that. And then if they get in you, they come right back out. But they come right back out of the fish and a little bit, very minimal damage done. When you leave the barbs in, that's where you have the problem. So I'll take the pliers, flatten all the barbs down on the twitch stick, and that's a great way to get your bait because you're pretty much going to hook up.
I've gotten more dedicated to flattening barbs out ever since the day that we buried that treble hook through my finger.
No, wouldn't have been bad. He stuck two of his fingers together, a single treble hook, one spine through one finger and the other one through the other finger. And he's looking at me going, can you get that out? I'm like,
help.
I think you're going down to see Dr. Dave.
And I did.
And the cool part about it is there's still one real doctor in town.
Yep.
And that's Dave Ballestis or Ballesteros. Ballesteros. Yeah.
Ballesteros.
You go on to Harbor, north of Fish and Franks, turn right on Harbor, and as soon as you get across Olean, he's right on the left, across from the...
He's on the backside of Fawcett, across from Peace River.
Yeah, across from the bayfront there. Big red sign says walk-in clinic, but he's still a real doctor. He'll take out hooks, he'll fix you up. Most of these, if you go to your regular doctor, they're going to say, well, you got to go to the emergency room. What a bunch of wusses. Yeah. I mean, give me a break.
And
I
like when you get to the emergency room, they don't know how to take it out anyway.
Yeah. So, I mean, Dave's still a real doctor. We still have one left in town. But anyway, back to the treble hook thing. You were using the Zara Spook. Fish flopped, and boom, there they are.
Pulled them right through. And it was like, and I did not have those barbs pinched. Or they would have come out. So
flatten the barbs on your hooks, especially if you're catch and release them. What do you care if a fish or two flops off every once in a while?
Exactly.
I've never
lost one just because he flopped off the hook because I pinched the barbs. I mean, when I've got one hooked and bring it in, it's coming in. You know?
Yeah.
Pure and simple.
Yeah, no, I think it's a great way to go. But try that on your next time you use them in ladyfish, and you get a very minimal damage to you or the fish.
And you're using that bucktail jig.
Yeah.
I mean,
the little tiny one. But I don't pinch the barbs in the crappie jigs.
Well, I mean, I've used
tiny enough.
Actually, just use like a 16th or an 8th ounce Mission fishing jig head or any of the jig head, plain bare jig head. Throw it out there, they eat it.
Yeah, I agree with Vinny, though. I'm going to go with Vinny on this one. The little fuzzy crappie jigs, those little tiny ones, I think they're a great way to go.
Oh, yeah, they're great. I mean, I learned that from Dwayne and Scott, you know, the plain jig head.
Right.
I mean, I've been out there with them and see a school of ladyfish just throw it out in there.
They're on it.
5 minutes, you've got all the ladyfish you'll ever need.
But
I've
anyway,
had them eat a plain gold mustad hook.
Right around Mangrove Point, Whorehouse Point, whatever your local name for it is. But trolling from there outside the bar, about 6 feet of water, you think?
4 feet.
4 feet.
Four
so
feet
you're
of
in
water.
Pretty close.
Yeah.
And once you get the ladyfish, put a couple of them in the well. And now, what do you do to find tarpon?
Well, you know, last week, Harbor was pretty choppy. We weren't seeing them roll. So, but we've been real lucky. I mean, the whole club has been going after tarpon for the last couple of months at the north end of the 20-foot hole, north hole.
Right.
And then right there from marker one down towards ponds. We've been doing really well. So we typically move between those two areas.
Now, are you drifting, trolling?
We're drifting.
Okay.
We're drifting with a ladyfish with a balloon about 6 feet above the bait.
Now, what size hook are you using on your ladyfish?
I'm using 8-aught.
Okay, in order, that's what I'm asking. You know, you're getting ready to put on the tarpon, but when you hook the ladyfish through the jaw and out the top of the jaw, across the eyes?
In the top of the mouth.
You open his mouth up.
Open his mouth in the top, in the roof of the mouth and out
right
through
out,
the V.
Okay, right out through the top.
Yeah.
And the nice part about that, the balloon does not have to break away by the, and if it does, it's illegal. So tie the balloon hard to the line. Because breakaway of any kind of plastic in the harbor is against federal laws. Forget the local laws, because there's nothing about the state about that, but federal law says you're not allowed to throw anything in the water intentionally. It's funny, a little girl can stand on the beach and let go of a balloon and it flies away and there's no fine for it, but as soon as you put a balloon on the line and have it break away, and it'll pop. I mean, it's just a balloon. So.
Well, I like to use the balloon because it gets the bait away from the boat. And but a lot of the guys are using bobbers. And some are just free line and letting the ladyfish go on its own. But most are using bobbers or balloons.
Now, I'm going to go with you on the bobber balloon because I want to know where the fish is. Forget about, you know, I don't, and you can set it to whatever depth because it'll just slide on the line a little bit. But I like knowing where my bait is.
Well, especially if you've got more than one person doing it.
Exactly. You know? Because a free line bait, you have no idea if that fish, if it's alive, he could be in front of the boat, next to the boat, behind
under
the boat. In the motor. I mean, and all of a sudden you go to reel in and you can't move it and he's wrapped eight times around your outboard.
Yeah.
So with the balloon, it's to me a great place marker. I know where my bait is.
And to me, it's easier to keep the slack out of the line, especially I use braided line. And if you're not careful, you can get slack in the line. You get a fish hook up, and you got nothing to set a hook on. You
know? Everything's – it's just a nightmare. So I'm with you 100% on the balloon versus the free line bait. If it's a cut bait and I know it's going to drag behind me, then I'll do a lot of the free lining stuff. But as soon as it's a live bait, I want a place marker.
Yep.
Yeah.
So
–
anyway, so you're out there drifting around. What do you, you know, you're going along, you're drifting, and then all of a sudden, the balloon's gone. Where's the drill?
Well, I've had two experiences. I've got what's the setting on the reel, the little bait?
The drag.
Drag, where you can flip the switch and
the
have
dual drag.
The dual
bait
drag
runners,
system.
Bait feeders, live liners.
Yeah. I used to have that set to where, you know, when you get a hit, boom, it's taken off. And I've lost a lot of tarpon doing that, so now I leave the drag set in the fighting position, and you know, you see the balloon go, you usually see it shaking all over the place, and then usually a tarpon's going in the air. And you know, grab a hold of the rod. I don't really set the hook hard right away.
Are you using a circle hook or J hook?
It's a circle.
Yeah.
And it you know, I just put the pressure on the rod and let the fish hook himself.
Yeah, well, that's what you got to do with a circle.
And then norm.
Now I understand why you're not going through the lower lip and the top, because a circle hook's such a booger to get in a bait.
Yeah.
It's tough. That's why if you open the fish's mouth and just go through the upper jaw, you can get that circle hook in. But that little extra room is tough to do, you know, going through the lower jaw and the upper jaw.
And normally what I've done is after I know I've got the fish on, I'll try to set the hook a little harder just to try and bury it if it's, you know,
right,
in the hard part of that tarpon.
Well, the problem with the tarpon is they have so much cartilage in their mouth. I mean, it's a very heavily structured mouth. I mean, they're just unbelievably tough. And so while you're not really technically setting the hook on the tarpon when you jerk it again, what you're trying to do is actually give it purchase into the fish. It's already tried to go in, but sometimes it only gets kind of on the surface a little bit. By giving that extra pullback, not a jerk back,
yeah,
you get that hook to go in a little bit better and actually stand a better chance of not having him jump off the hook.
Yeah. One thing that we've been sharing in the club with everyone that's going after tarpon is making sure you got a sharp hook. And, you know, using a file, you know, even if it's a new hook, sharpen it.
And when you're going to sharpen the hook, the one thing to remember is always start, you know, at the bend and file out towards the point and never pull backwards along the point. Always go up, lift the file away, and keep working the point out. Because as soon as you pull back, you've created a bend or a flat spot again. You have to only work it out from the, how do I say that, from the bend out,
yeah,
across the point, but don't ever pull backwards to the point, because it just ruins all the work you just did is gone in one stroke.
Yeah.
So you got to file out towards the point, lift your file up, and then keep coming back, and it's just kind of a continuous pushing motion, and you don't want to pull backwards from the point down, because it just ruins all the work you did.
Yeah.
We used to sell a gazillion hook files, and people got out of the habit of filing the hook, and you lose a lot of fish if you
as
don't
cheap
file
as
the hook.
Hooks are nowadays, a lot of people figure, oh, I'm not going to take the time to go ahead and sharpen them, and they don't think that they're not sharp enough when they buy them new and go out there.
There is only one hook that always comes unbelievably sharp, and that's the cutting point by
right.
owner, and that has a broadhead arrow type tip.
Yep.
And that thing will slice sideways, it'll slice in. You touch your finger with it, it's already in your finger before you know what happened.
Well,
I don't even use them because they're too dangerous.
We've been using the bait busters a lot, you know, to catch the tarpon. And if you really look, you get a brand new one out of the pack, it's not that sharp. And you put a file on it, and then you notice a big difference.
If you put a magnifying glass on it, you'll see there's actually a little curl to the tip. Little tiny bit of curl.
Yeah.
And if you knock that curl off, but always push out, and it sharpens really, really quick. As soon as you pull back, you're screwed. So, anyway, so
all it takes?
Well, sitting in a room with you is real close comparison here. Now, Minnie, you've seen the bobber starts going crazy, everything else happens, you pick up the rod, and the fish is taken off. How long do you wait before you give it that extra pull?
I usually wait until, 30 seconds at the most. You know, when I know it's not holding the bait, it's actually got the hook in its mouth, and, it's in there. Then I try to set it one time hard, and then just fight the fish.
Now, what happens when he comes up? Well, tarpon tend to jump a lot.
I usually get
What's
caught
your best
off guard.
Advice?
They say bow to the king, but I'm usually caught off guard. But what I've learned, and believe me, I'm not good at it. I've lost more than I've caught. Yeah, but at least what I've learned is take your time with a tarpon. Don't get in a hurry to get him to the boat because he will whip up on you. If you get him too close to the boat, he's going to be all under it, all around it. Take your time. Let him take some line. And
that's
just
amazingly good advice. Is the more you take your time,
a little bit,
the more you're going to land that fish. You get him to the boat too soon, you better back that drag off because he's not done and he's going to run again. And if you drag still tight when he comes to the boat too quick, you're going to lose that fish. He's going to pull the hook, he's going to break the line, something's going to happen. So if you mess up and you get him right next to the boat and he's still powerful, loosen the drag at least two, three turns because he's going to take off. Let him run a quarter, half spool out, and then come back to tighten the drag again. And if you do what you say, Vinny, you don't have to go through that. You can just maintain the fight, let him get out there, and try and get a few jumps out of him, and that'll wear him out quicker than anything. The more he stays in the water, the longer the fight's going to be. So that's excellent advice.
And you're using the boat to wear him out too.
Let him tug.
They start dragging a boat around. That tires him out pretty quick.
Make sure you're equipped too. Make sure you got the right rod and reel. You got enough line where
line
you can
capacity.
Let him run.
Yep.
That's one of the things about it. And like you say, when you're using the dual drags, I try and keep that first. The bait live liner drag, the bait feeder, bait runner drag, as tight. I used as much of it as possible so that he's under some pull when I'm using a circle hook, because if he's just running with it, the hook doesn't do any good. So I want the bait runner dual drag set as tight as possible, and I'm not big on leaving it in the holder because I've had too many times I couldn't get it out of the holder without the dual drag on. You're setting your drag much better than I am.
that fish is pulling it in that rod, and you're really straining your milk to get it up out of that holder. I've had that happen even on smaller fish, redfish and snook, when they get a good run going. You've got that thing sitting in a rod holder.
I like to
get them out.
I like doing the dual drag. It's the only thing I'm not on your side with. I tighten my dual drag, my bait runner up, the secondary drag as tight as possible. Let them run on that because it's a limited amount of tension.
Yeah, but I quit doing that because I lost several because I felt like maybe I didn't get the hook in them because I had the bait runner on.
See, I don't use circle hooks, and so when it's a whole different experience. That circle hook, you have to have that extra pressure. I'm using the J hooks, and so as soon as I pick it up, I palm the spool, I set my hook hard, I let go of the spool, and then I start reeling. And so it's a little different steps. And I'm not used to the whole circle hook thing because I have a hard time with them. I can't get them out of a fish.
One other thing why I like the balloon is
get them into the fish.
If you've got the rod in the rod holder and you get your balloon out there and you're paying attention to your balloon, a lot of times you see it coming.
Right.
I mean, that ladyfish will start, you'll see the balloon moving around and
gets
getting a little
excited.
Crazy. Something's going on. And then you see that the thing's got a hit on it. And so you can get ready.
Now, this is Darlene telling you that all that's going on, right?
Right. Absolutely.
Okay. That's what I thought.
You thought I was talking about myself?
I had to interject that there. Because I know she's very sharp at this,
I don't know where this is going, and I'm not sure I want to know.
I'm going to be nice, Vinny.
Do I have a... I asked for this. I know I did, so it's just... I don't know where to go with it all from here. But anyway, so what happens when you get him to the boat? I want to kind of get the end of the story. You fought him. He's jumped. You've either gotten your luck in or you've skilled, you know, slacking the lineup. And so he's now next to the boat. What's your motions once you have that fish next to the boat?
Well, once I know he's wore down to the point where I can grab him, you know, I'll put on a glove and I'll...
Smart idea.
And grab him, you know, get a hold of his lower jaw and get a hold of it deep.
Now, I handle him, and for people who don't know this, you handle him like you would a largemouth bass, except on a much, much larger scale.
Yeah.
But it's the same basic technique. Now, you can either put your fingers inside of his mouth or your thumb inside and your fingers outside. Sometimes I start off with my fingers on the inside, grabbing them to get a better hold on them. But once I've got him under control, I tend to want to turn my hand the other way so I can put my knuckles under his jaw.
That's what I do.
So that I can control him a little better. And it just, to me, a lot of times I start my fingers inside. And then once I'm going to get my hook, I switch around, put my thumb inside, my fingers under, so I can curl my knuckles up a little
bit. Yeah, I try to get my fingers as deep as I can under the jaw and get a hold of it. And one reason I do that is I'm afraid of the hook that's still in his mouth.
That's the dangerous part of the fish, is that hook. And because of the tarpon, now, if I'm fishing it, I'm not really using a barb. But now, if I have friends, family, customers, you know, I always left the barb in there, which made everything more dangerous. So now I have to be extra careful, because you don't want to be attached to a 150-pound fish.
Yeah.
And so you look, see where the hook is, grab the opposite corner of the mouth, opposite part of the mouth, and then go to get your hook out. Now, are you using tools, or you fingers, or what? How do you get your hook out?
Well, sometimes you can just get the hook right out with your hand. But normally I'll have a pair of pliers, and I'll get the hook and pop it out.
Good advice. That's what we're looking for. You know, because you got to remember, we've got people that are sitting in England right now, and several towns around London and all that listening to us, and they're sitting there, have never really seen personal with a tarp, and much less actually been able to get one on the line. And these are the things they want to know. I mean, all the little details of it is really cool. And that's kind of what I'm trying to get from you.
Have you tried a...
Are you struggling?
No, everything's good. I'm
have
just
you
explaining
tried a
de-hooker? You know,
no, I haven't on a tarpon.
One of the things that people forget when they're doing this is how some of the most mundane little tiny details are actually the coolest thing.
Yeah. I mean, normally by the time you got the tarpon to the boat and you can actually hold it by his jaw, he's wore out. You know, so you can get a pair of needle nose, and that's what I use, a pair of needle nose, and get the hook out.
Now, you've got the hook out, and now the law in Florida is really, really weird. Now, the way I understand it, and this may or may not be exactly true, because it's hard, there's so many different interpretations of the law, but if the fish is small enough where you can lift him up and take a picture without damaging the fish, you're allowed to. If he's so big that you would damage the fish by lifting him up, you're not allowed to. That is the way I've come to interpret the law.
Yeah, my interpretation is if it's under 40 inches, that you can hold it up,
right?
You know, and take your picture. If it's over 40 inches, I'm speaking to a tarpon.
I don't know if there's a inch measurement on it.
Yeah.
I think it's just safely, you know, without damaging the fish.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if you're a weightlifter and you can hold 80 pounds easily in your hand or something, that might be different. I don't know. But I can't do it, and there's no way I'm doing that anymore.
Yeah.
But
I'm sure that would be all up to interpretation by the FWC officer.
And therein lies, that's the big problem, is that everybody gets to interpret this any way they want. But now he's sitting there next to the boat, and you're trying to revive him. And the one thing you'll notice about your tarpon at this point is he's stiff as a board.
Yeah.
He's got so much acid in his muscles that he literally cannot swim. He's very, very stiff, very, very rigid. You can turn him on his side, get some great pictures of him. Now, the one thing I do not recommend at all is sloshing this fish back and forth. if you've just no run a marathon, do you want somebody grabbing you by the lapels and shaking you back and forth? Or do you just want to relax? The object behind this is just to let him relax. So hold him by the lower jaw, and the best idea is turn your trolling motor on as slow as it will go. And just put it in a circle. And just hold the fish next to the boat and let the fish relax. Now, you know when the fish is ready, but not when he wants to pull out of your hand, because he doesn't like being held by a human. Let's face it. He thinks, you know, you're trying to kill him, eat him, whatever. He doesn't know you're trying to revive him. So the easiest thing to do is just hold him there, watch the body of the fish, and move your hand a little bit side to side to encourage him to undulate. Okay. And as soon as you see him get that serpentine snake motion back to his body, now he's beginning to relax. His muscles are coming back to normal. This could take 5, 10, 15, 20, 30, 40, 45 minutes I've had him go. But if you let him go before you see his body relaxed and acting like a flag in a light wind, you've killed that fish. Because if he's stiff when you release him, he's going right to the bottom and die. And he'll live an hour or so, and that's just not what we want to do. Make sure you hold on to him long enough, hard enough, to make sure that body's nice and loose and he's good. And then when you let him go, he's going to be tired for a while, but you both had a great workout. And he's got stories to tell his buddies about this alien who grabbed him and did all this stuff. And
don't stay away from the light.
and no probing on the tarpon. It's not necessary unless, you know. So, but other than that, that's actually how you do this. And it really works, but it's a simple rule. If the tarpon's body's stiff, keep a hold of him. Muscle up, you know, bunch up, and hold on to him. Don't let him go until you know he's ready. He's a fish. He doesn't understand. You're smarter than he is, supposedly. And so just do what I told you to do. You'll be fine.
Yep.
Anyway, so, Greg, you went out in the Gulf fishing.
Actually, Vinny and I went out in the Gulf
fishing
together.
You guys both went out.
Yeah, he'd been whining that I never invited him to go fishing, so my name...
And you were worried about that? You asked to be there, huh? Does the term self-inflicted have any meaning for you?
It wasn't that painful. Sundays are much worse.
Okay.
So actually, you know, I says, yeah, sure, you know, sure, I went with my neighbor, Dwayne Wilhelm. I fish with him fairly regular offshore. And I says, hey, Vinny'd like to go fishing with us. Is it okay if I ask him along?
Sure.
So Vinny and I took wing and went with Dwayne and his dad, Mike, and we went offshore. We went out of Placida. He runs a 22-foot sea hunt, nice little boat, 150, could be a little more power, but we started at roughly 24 miles. We sat down. We were in 65 feet of water to get some squirrel fish, and we did get a couple, but we caught a few nice lane snapper, and then we headed on out to some numbers that we've got out on some real hard bottom. And we went 2 days, Thursday and Friday.
Now, what kills me is we always use the term hard bottom, but it's actually more like Swiss cheese bottom.
Exactly.
What it is bottom on your depth finder that kind of looks like it's a flat bottom and hard, but if you would picture just a huge amount of little canyons,
right?
You've got these like mesas coming up, and they're anywhere from a foot across to several feet to 20 feet. But in between all that, the water's eroded the sandstone limestone out, and you've got, if you would picture a alien landscape where you have all these little towers that are all basically the same height.
Right.
And what it is that the bottom is eroded down, and you've got tons of canyons, and you go over it, you don't really see any fish because they're hiding up
underneath.
They're
down in that, yeah.
The ledges.
The little depressions, the ledges and stuff like that. And we actually have a spot out there that there is actually a ledge that you can read on the machine. And Dwayne's got a pretty good bottom machine. It's a Simrad, and I don't know that we actually made it over to that ledge this time around, but it shows about a 1 foot drop, and it's very pronounced on the machine because it does take good pictures. But we hit that hard bottom, and Thursday it was like we couldn't put a put anything down without catching a fish.
So what are you using for bait out there?
Actually, we were, Vinny was surprised when he saw me, Dwayne, and his dad, Mike. We all dropped in a big 6-ounce Spro jig, bucktail,
right,
with a rubber on it. Dwayne and his dad were using some generic stuff that they picked a bag up somewhere, and they were tipping it with a little piece of squid wing on the hook.
Right.
For scent, I was actually using Gulp Swim and Mullet, the big one.
Right.
And dropping that down there, and as fast as we could get it in the water, bang, we're getting hooked up, you know. And he goes, what are you using? So we got him on a jig, and we brought in...
All right, just to be very, very clear about this, you're not allowed to put the squid on the single hook jig.
Exactly.
Now, that is illegal. You can't do that unless it's a circle hook. Now, what you can do, and which actually works just as well, and I believe it works better, is a product called Fish Bites.
Mm-hmm.
Fish Bites is perfectly legal to add to a single hook jig, and I actually like the bloodworm scent the best, but they have clam and squid and shrimp and all these different flavors. You can use whichever one you want. I'd kind of pick it by the color, but once you get down to 60 feet, color's irrelevant because everything's in grayscale anyway. But use Fish Bites, or let's go really old school and go back to the Uncle Josh pork rinds.
Right.
Uncle Josh pork rind baits are excellent out in the Gulf for grouper. It's one of the things I still sell a lot of Uncle Josh for the grouper guys. But now my first choice is always going to be the Fish Bites. But if you've got a jar of Uncle Josh pork rinds in your tackle box, you don't know what else to use them for,
take them
grouper fishing. Use your big 4-ounce, 6-ounce, 8-ounce bucktail jigs with the hair on them, the regular, you know, deer hair jigs, and then tip it with either Fish Bites, the Uncle Josh, or a Gulp.
And Gulp is that was exactly one. What I was putting on. I was using a Gulp.
Yeah.
And it was like, wow. And I had done that when I went with Dwayne on his Dwayne French on his big 42-foot on the big boat.
Dwayne French, and he's got that great charter thing going on right now. And Dwayne's probably one of the best offshore trips you can get at this point. I mean, it's an amazing experience. And beautiful boat.
And I caught a lot of fish that day, and Dwayne was actually kind of surprised. He goes, who'd you learn that from? I says, well, actually, I said, I think the first one that told me about it was Morris Campbell.
Mm-hmm.
And was going with Dwayne. He started doing it, and I said, man, this works great, and I don't have to worry about bait.
Yeah.
You know. But the only bad thing about it is when you drop that jig head with that Gulp bait on it down, and if there's a lot of little fish, they pick it to pieces.
And I like that because I sell Gulp.
Yeah.
So I don't have a problem with
that.
To me, that's a great side effect. I wish I could tell you that bothered me, but I'm all good with it.
From the fisherman's side of this.
Tough luck, guys. Buy another bag.
Yeah, sucks to be you, right?
Sucks to be you. Good to be me. I wish I could tell you that.
But actually, we were limited out on grouper the first day before noon. And we headed on up towards the Mohawk. And onto a Charlie's Reef number, which are 200 yards apart, and there's a lot of boxcars there. And if you have a halfway decent machine, you can cruise that area off the public number and find all these boxcars that aren't listed as numbers.
Well, the best thing you can do if you're going to go out grouper fishing is get to the public numbers, shut the boat down, and stop right there. Then engage your motor as slow as it will go and turn your wheel hard, left or right, doesn't matter. Get the wheel turned as far to the one side as you can. Watch the bottom machine and have somebody there with a marker jug.
Right.
You need, you know, I would say at least 2 pounds, if not 5 pounds of lead and a string long enough to about 10 feet deeper than the water. And as soon as you see the bottom machine come up a foot, 2 foot, yell throw and have him throw it back 10 feet as far as he can into your bubble, into the prop wash.
Yep.
Because by the time the depth finder sees it and it comes up in your screen, it's already 10 to 20 feet behind the boat. So you need to be able to throw back into the thing and then come drift again. And if you still see that structure, anchor up and fish on it, drift across it and fish. But
yeah, so we went over there and we had actually taken a bucket of the old nasty cold shrimp and shiners and everything else, And we were dumping, hoping to bring some yellowtail up, because Robert had told us that they'd been catching some out that way. Well, we didn't get any yellowtail. But the boxcar that we happened to sit down on was inhabited by several very large inhabitants that we like to refer to as Jewfish.
Oh, lots of big Jewfish, huh?
Vinny managed to haul in about a 100-pounder. So that,
well, that's fun.
It wasn't huge. Oh, he was straining his milk. And I
don't know why, but for some reason Vinny's turning red. I think we're gonna have to go to Vinny on this show.
He was getting lessons on how to fight that fish as he was trying to, because he was giving that fish way too much time to rest. I mean, Mike and I are both telling Vinny, work him. You know, even if it's a short pump, you know, he's trying to do the whole all the way up and then reel down. Not, you know, and he's, like I said, straining his milk. I said, do it short, quick, short, you know, boom, 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 boom. I said, that way you keep his head coming towards you. I said, when you're doing that and you're not gaining on him, he's turning right back down to the bottom and he's resting more than you are.
Yeah.
So he finally started doing it.
You know, Frank, had it not been for the guidance that I got from Greg.
Well, now, I seem to recall somebody telling me.
Oh, my gosh.
I seem to recall somebody telling me after our two-day ordeal that he was very happy that he went and he'd actually learned something from
it. I think
he said the old master.
Oh, man.
But
we got to put some video on
this. But, you know,
this.
Frank, you got to have the right bait for those big grouper. You know. I took a rotten pinfish that came out of our freezer bucket.
Right.
No, it was actually two pinfish.
Two pinfish, some old nasty shrimp.
Some nasty shrimp and a piece of squid.
Yeah, and a piece of squid.
He dropped it down.
And every time he dropped it in, he was getting hit.
Well, you know.
We left some equipment out there, including a rod. Well,
pieces of the rod.
Yeah, okay. That one big heavy jigging rod, the pencil.
Yeah.
Dwayne got hooked up on one, and it was a big one, because Dwayne's not a small boy, and
he's a big guy.
Dwayne
was following Greg's advice. You know, that jerk that thing in quick and snap the rod.
Blew the rod into multiple pieces?
Multiple pieces. And it broke the first time, and he thought, well, he's still fighting the fish.
Mm-hmm.
He thought, well, he'll get it up, and at least he'll have all the pieces to bring back in for his warranty.
Right.
Well, that lasted for about another 10 seconds, then the line snapped.
Oh.
He says, well, I guess I'm only taking the butt end in. I says, well, you do know a couple of guys that can probably help you out with that down there at the shop, you know. But we had a good day, and that was the first day. I mean, we caught a few. We didn't catch
you
a
didn't,
lot of lane.
You didn't realize how much it cost me to get him out of here, did you? You didn't know, I mean, how much I have to pay, you know, to get someone to take him out of here.
But
it's expensive to get a day of quiet.
Two days.
Yeah. Actually, the second day, I don't think we even came and got any bait or anything.
No, we didn't.
We went out with the jig heads and stuff, and that was it, you know. The second day, we worked for our fish. It was went to the same area. We did get some bites first thing in the morning. We put a couple of fish in the box, and then it was like somebody threw the switch. I mean, we were catching a lot of small stuff. We couldn't catch any big stuff. And I mean, we were on numbers where we were pulling in 26, 28, 30 inches the day before.
Right.
And we were catching a lot of 18 and 19 inches then.
Yeah.
But you know, as the day went on, we got later into the afternoon, and probably in the last hour and a half, 2 hours that we fished, we caught 10 grouper.
Yeah.
That filled our limit for the day. And we actually brought a lot of fish on, both between the 2 days. Of course, it would have been nicer if the feds had decided we could still have four apiece instead of three, but...
Yeah, this is getting nuts. I saw somebody praising the president and the other ones for something he did. I said, are you guys out of your mind? Don't encourage this stuff. I mean, they're I don't know who the presidential advisors are, but I've got to tell you, these people have never, ever done anything in their life outside of sitting in a room.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's just... I'm appalled. If you're going to make judgments and make laws and rules, you need to go out and do it.
Go see what's going on. Yeah.
Yeah, you need to go out and do it. Get on a boat, go out, figure out what you're doing. And, you know, it's
yeah, these people are clueless.
Now, we did try to get into some gags that second day, right? Or the first day we did.
The first day we were going to try to get some gags over around Charlie's, because there's actually structure there.
Yeah.
I mean, gags are more structure-oriented. I mean, you will pick them up off of a ledge, you know, if you've got a...
Right now, Boca Grande Pass has got keeper gags in it, yeah. By the way. I just, I've had three or four people saying they're drifting through the pass, but it's a lot like tarpon fishing.
Yeah.
You got to let it hit the bottom, come up one or two cranks, and as you're drifting across there, they will come up to hit it. But they're actually catching some keeper gags, less in Captiva Pass, more in Boca Grande Pass. But some of them have come all the way up into the passes, or they're leaving to get out of the passes. I don't know which.
Well, and actually, I think what we're seeing is, I think they're actually coming in, because if you think about it, as our winter goes on, we usually get gags in closer, and the reds go out further.
Right. So I don't really know which one's going on. I'm gonna say you're probably right on that. Well, anyway, is there anything else we need to talk about today, guys?
I think that pretty much covers it. Unless
I guess I'm the speaker for the PGI Fishing Club this
Tuesday.
Month, this Tuesday, in a day or so. So if you're a member of the PGI Fishing Club, I'll be seeing you there. And if not, we're going to try and... tomorrow morning, Robert and I are going to do our weekly fishing update. Things got a little chaotic Friday, and he's got a bunch of stuff on this weekend. So we're going to give our fishing update. That will be done tomorrow morning. And hopefully we're going to have a few more radio fishing. Our goal is to get at least five a week. So we're working on that, plus on the water fishing reports. But anyway, we got Vinny and Captain Greg with us today. And thank you guys. I appreciate you guys coming on. Any last words of wisdom?
Well, I'll kowtow to the former president here and let him come up with some
The future president.
The future former
president.
Yeah. Well, they're probably going to wish it was former the minute he gets sworn in.
You're planning on making some changes here, toughening things
up,
right?
We'll listen to these words of wisdom. Hopefully you're better than the one we have in Washington.
With that, it's been great, Frank.
Oh, God. All right.
Folks won't find us now because Mr. Satch and Mr. Cross.
I wanted to throw something in there, but
we gone fishing instead of just a wishing.